Masechet Pesachim has been dedicated by Mr. Ike J. Shehebad in honor of his grandparents, Mr. Ike and Jeanette Beebe. We bless Mr. Ike Shehebad, who's been a sponsor of the Daf Yomi for many days. They should continue to enjoy success, health, and happiness. May his grandparents also enjoy much nachat from him as well as all their grandchildren, and may they only share in simachot for the entire family. Amen.
Daf Ayin Dalet. Today's daf has been dedicated by Mr. Joe Habert in memory of his grandfather Gabriel Ben Zakiya. Ruach Adonai Tanihenu Began Eden. Amen.
Amen.
Today's daf is being studied in Lunishmat Acham Baruch Rafael Ben Miriam and Avraham Ben Esther. Ruach Hashem Tanihem Began Eden. Amen. We are starting on Daf Ayin Dalet. We begin the seventh Perek, Perek Ketzad Solin. Our Perek will discuss some of the procedure of how they used to bring the Korban Pesach on the 14th day of Nisan, in the time of the Bet HaMikdash. And the Mishnah begins, Kesad Solin et Pesach. How did they roast the Pesach? Now, the reason why our Mishnah starts off with this is because in the last Perek, we learned that the roasting of the Korban Pesach is not Dohe Shabbat. So once we learned that it's not Dohe Shabbat, now we're asking, well, when you do roast it, how is the roasting supposed to be done? That's the way the Rimelunil or the Rivan explains the the Rimelunil. That's the way he explains the connection between the last Perek and this Perek. In any event, Kesad Solin et Pesach. How do they roast the Korban Pesach? Mevi'in shefut shel rimon. They would bring a spit made out of pomegranate wood, and we will see why. The Gemara will tell us why they chose specifically that wood. Ve tochavo letoch piv, and they would thrust it through the mouth of the Korban Pesach, ad bet nekuvato, until it would come out the backside of the animal. Tosfot says the reason why they would do this is in order that the thick part of the spit would be by the mouth area. So they would thicken the narrow part, so the fat part of the stick would be on the heavy side of the animal, so it's resting on the heavy part, so it's able to hold it well. And they would hold it face down so the blood would drip down. I mean, the neck of the animal was tilted down in order that the blood will drip out of the neck. In any event, the Mishnah continues, V'notenet kera'av ve'et b'nei me'av letocho. They would place the kera'av is the legs of the animal, and the insides, the b'nei me'av, the intestines, they would place it in the cavity of the animal, which means they would cut, let's say, from the knee down, that's the kera'im of the animal, and they would also pull the insides of the animal out, the intestines, etc., and they would put it inside the cavity of the animal, like they would collect it together, and as if it's in a pocket in the animal itself. That's the opinion of Rabbi Yosei Gedili. Rabbi Akiva Omer, Rabbi Akiva says, Kemin bishul huze. He says, by placing it in the cavity of the animal, it's as if you're cooking it, because it's similar as placing it in a pot. And the halakha says that the Korban Pesach must be roasted. You cannot cook any part of the animal. So therefore he says, they would not take the legs and the inside and the insides of the animal and place it in the cavity. So what would they do? Ela tolin chutzalo. They would hang it outside of it. Meaning, according to Rashi, they would place it above the head of the animal. Or according to Harambam, they would place it in the oven next to the animal itself. So chutzalo either means away from the inside of the animal on top of its head, according to Rashi, or Harambam, away from the animal totally next to it in the oven. En solin et haPesach lo al haShefut. You do not roast the Korban Pesach, not on a metal spit. And the Gemara will explain why. Velo ala askela, nor on a grill, a metal grill. Amar Rav Tzadok, Maaseh b'Rabban Gamliel, Shama l'tovi avdo. One time, Rabbi Tzadok says a story with Rabban Gamliel that he once told his servant Tobi, Tse v'tzaleh lanu et haPesach al askela. Go and grill for us the Korban Pesach on a grill. The Gemara is going to ask, what do you mean? You just told me on the grill is Asur. Now you're telling me that the rabbi told the servant. The Gemara will explain that. And the Gemara begins, Veniti shel matechet. The Gemara asks, how come you don't
roast the Korban Pesach on a metal spit, which means why is it forbidden? So the Gemara explains the reason. Aidi deham miksato ham kulo, because metal conducts heat, and therefore we're concerned that the part of the spit that's hanging outside the animal is going to get heated by the fire itself. By that part getting heated, it's going to conduct heat throughout the rest of the spit where the animal is. Now that animal is going to get cooked from the heat of the metal and not from the heat of the fire. And the Gemara says, "Vekamadve mahamata shefud." It's going to get roasted from the spit itself, from the heat. Verahamana amar, and the Torah says, "Tzili esh." It has to be roasted from the fire. Velo tzili mahmat davar acher, and not roasted by something else. And therefore, metal is not good for the roasting of Korban Pesach because it conducts the heat. So the Gemara says, fine. Veniti shel dekel. How come you can't take a palm branch? Which means the Mishnah was very specific in saying shefut shel rimon of a pomegranate. Why can't you take of a palm branch? So the Gemara says, I did eat le shive, because inside the palm branch there's ridges. Rashi says shurot. There are like rows where water is able to collect. Grooves, they call it. So what's going to happen? Mapik maya. The water that's collected in these grooves is going to come out when you start to roast it. And what's going to happen if the water comes out? Vahave kimbushal. With water, it's going to cook the Korban Pesach. Whenever you have water, it's called mevushal. And the Korban Pesach has to be tzeli. It has to be roasted. So therefore, the palm branch is not good because of the water content in the branch. Veniti shel te'ena. So the Gemara says, how come you don't bring a fig branch? So the Gemara says, Aidi de mehalhal, since it's hollow, meaning the palm, the fig branch has a hollow cavity inside where water collects, mapik maya. It also lets out water. Vahavele kimbushal. And therefore the Korban Pesach is going to be cooked rather than roasted. Veniti shel alon, shel haruv, veshel shikma. So the Gemara says, why don't you use oak wood? Haruv would be carob wood, or from the sycamore tree. So the Gemara says, Aidi de'it be'ketre. Since there is what the Gemara calls knots that are at the on these pieces of wood, and the way you'd have to get rid of these knots is you'd have to cut them off. Mapik maya. So when you cut these knots off, the water is going to come out of the wood. So the Gemara says, Shlimon name'it be'ketre. Well, in the pomegranate wood also, they have these knots, and you also have to remove them. So, and the water is going to come out. The Gemara says, no, shi'ay ketre. The knots that are on the pomegranate wood are smooth, and therefore they don't interfere, and therefore you really don't have to cut them off. V'ibayitemau, you can have an alternate answer. Benagba bar shata. We're talking about a young sapling, a year old of pomegranate wood. Delet peketre. It did not grow these knots yet at all. So the Gemara then asks, V'aika be piskiya. It has the actual cut, which means when you cut the pomegranate wood, one of the sides is exposed. That's the area that you cut. Now water will come out of that side. And if the water comes out, it's going to cause the Pesach to be cooked. So the Gemara says, "Demapik lebe piskiya levar." You face that opening of the pomegranate to the outside. So if the water comes out, it'll drip outside. It will not drip onto the Korban Pesach, and therefore you have no problem of bishul. Gemara continues, "Matnitin delo k'Rabbi Yehuda." Our Mishnah is not following the opinion of Rabbi Yehuda. Why? Detanya Rabbi Yehuda Omer. Rabbi Yehuda said, "Keshem sheshefut shel etz eno nisraf." Just like if you were to use a wooden spit, and you would put meat on a wooden spit in an oven, let's say under a fire, so the wooden spit would not burn. Why? Because since the animal is covering the wood, it insulates the wood and protects it from the fire. Kach shfut shel matechet eno martiyah. So he says the same thing, a metal spit, since it has the korban on it, it is not going to get hot from the fire that's underneath it. Which means Rabbi Yehuda understood that the animal that's covering the metal spit will not allow the metal spit to become hot, and therefore it's only going to get cooked from the fire. Just like a wooden spit does not burn from the fire because the animal is covering it. So therefore he held that a metal spit is indeed permissible. Therefore our Mishnah cannot be going like the Biyuda. Amru lo, so they told him, big difference. Ze ham miksato ham kulo. By a metal spit, the part that's exposed to the fire will get hot. That's called ham miksato. Once that exposed piece of metal gets hot, ham kulo, it's going to conduct the heat throughout the entire spit, even on the part that the animal is over. Therefore, it's going to cause the animal to get hot from the metal and not from the fire. But by a wooden spit, the part that's revealed might get hot, but it's not going to conduct the heat throughout the entire wood. And therefore, there is a big difference why a metal spit should be asud, because it's not considered silly ash. It's silly al yedeh davar acher. Baruch atah Adonai Eloheinu Melech haolam shehakol nihyeh baruch.
Amen.
And the Gemara continues. Venotin et kira'av. Our Mishnah said, according to Rabbi Yosef, that you take the legs of the animal and the insides of the animal and you plate, you cut them, pull them out, and put it inside the cavity of the animal itself. Tanya, Rabbi Yishmael, we have a bright that Rabbi Yishmael said, Koreu toch toch. He called this procedure toch toch. Why? Because when you cook something in a pot and it starts to boil, so it makes a sound, toch toch toch. So he called this process of putting the innards inside the cavity and roasting it, he nicknamed it by the sound that it makes. Rashi gives an alternate interpretation. Some texts had the word that he called it tachbar. Tachbar is an abbreviation of two words, toch and bar. Toch is inside, bar is outside. Meaning they would place the meat inside, but it would protrude outside. So he nicknamed that procedure tachbar, meaning toch and bar. Rabbi Tarfon korehu gidi mekulas. Rabbi Tarfon called the procedure of roasting the Korban Pesach a gedi mekulas. Now, Rabbi Tarfon holds, like Rabbi Akiva of the Mishnah, Rabbi Akiva of the Mishnah held that you do not put the legs and the insides in the actual cavity itself, because that's considered cooking, it's bishul, it's like resting in a pot. Mm-hmm. And therefore he said you put it outside. So according to Rashi, outside, as we explained, means you put it by the head. You let it roast over the head. So that's why he calls it gedi mekulas. According to Rashi, gedi mekulas would mean a helmeted gedi. Because when you put the meat on top of its head, it looks like it's a helmet over its head. According to Harambam, however, he said you placed it next to it in the tanur. Gedi mekulas, according to Harambam, would mean an armored gedi, because it looks like it has its ammunition next to it. Tanu Rabbanan. We have a braita. Ezehu gedi mekulas da asur lechol belele pesach bizman hazeh. We learned in the previous perakim that there were certain places that had a minhag not to eat roasted meat on the night of Pesach. Specifically a gedi mekulas, because it looks like you're bringing a Korban Pesach and eating it outside the Beit HaMikdash. So the Gemara wants to know, what constitutes a gedi mekulas that is forbidden to eat in those places that had that custom to be stringent? So the Gemara says, Kol shetzela'o kulo ke'ehad. So long as the entire animal is roasted as one. To exclude, nehtach memenu ever. If let's say one of the limbs were cut off and you roasted it separately, Nishlak memenu ever, or let's say one of the limbs were cut off and that limb was cooked, in ze gedi mekulas. So in both cases, not considered a gedi mekulas. So the Gemara asked the obvious question: Hashta yesh tomar nehtak memenu ever? You told me if a limb was cut off, the afal gav de kamadve le bahadeh, even though it was roasted and roasted together with the rest of the animal, you're still telling me it's no good. Amart lo nishlak. Amart lo nishlak mebaya. Do you have to tell me, Amart lo, you said no, that it's no good. Nishlak mebaya? you have to tell me if you cut off a limb and you cooked it, of course it's not going to be good. If you cut off a limb and roasted it, it's not good. Or the most, if you cut off a limb and cooked it, it's no good. What does the Gemara have to say that? So the Gemara Amar of Sheshad, Sheshalko b'mechubar. The Hiddush is that even if you cooked the Gedim Kulas when it was still attached, and even if you subsequently roasted it after, it is still going to be asur. So those are the two Hiddushim by the Gedim Mekulas. Basically, it must be roasted as one piece altogether. That was what is forbidden in those places. Comes the Gemara now and moves on to a new point. Amar Rabba, hai mulyata sharia. What is mulyata? Mulyata would be an animal that is stuffed with meat. For example, they would take a chicken, or they would take, let's say, a sheep, and they have the meat of it, they would stuff that meat, the carcass of the animal, with other meat. Now, what is permissible? So the Gemara is going to tell us it is permissible to roast this meat as is. Well, what should be the concern? Well, the concern is we're talking about where, let's say, you did not salt the meat properly, and therefore, at least the inside meat, the stuffing, has blood in it. The concern is that as you start to roast, so it's going to start to draw out the blood from the inner meat, and it's going to get absorbed in the carcass, in the outer meat. Now already that blood is isur, because the halakha says once the blood comes out of the piece of meat, that blood is called dam shepiresh, and dam shepiresh is asur. So the Gemara is telling you from the beginning, the mulyata, meaning this stuffed meat stuffed in meat, it is permissible to roast it. So the Gemara says, "Amar le'Abaye, Abaye esraba ve'akabalah dama." What are you talking about? It's going to absorb the blood, which means the blood that's on the inside is going to come out, and it's going to get absorbed in the outer meat, and therefore there's blood in there. Now Tosafot points out that the case is talking about when the outer piece of meat was already salted. Because if it wasn't salted, then you wouldn't have a problem at all. Because the deen is that Aidi de Tarid leflot lo bala. When a piece of meat is busy letting out, it doesn't absorb. So therefore you wouldn't have a problem in such a case. The Hiddush is even if you salted the outer piece of meat, and you didn't salt the inner piece of meat, where it has the ability to absorb. So now the Gemara is saying, oh, what do you mean? It's going to absorb the blood. So Amar le, so Abaye answers, Kebolah kach polta. We have a rule. Just like it absorbs, it also spits out. Which means it'll go straight through. It'll go from the inner meat to the outer meat, and through the outer meat into the fire, and therefore you have no problem. The Gemara says, Ne'ma Messiah le, let us bring a proof to this principle. Noten et kera'av et bene me'av letocho. Al Mishnah. We said you take the insides of the Qurban Pesach and place it inside the Qurban Pesach. That's a similar case as Mulyata. It's meat within meat. My Ta'ama, what's the reason why it's kosher to do such a thing? What about the blood that's going to go from the inner meat, right? The Me'ayim, and it's going to go into the outer meat. Mishum Da'amrina Kibol Okach Polto. Must be because we're using the principle of what? That just like it gets swallowed into the outer meat, it's also going to spit it out. So we have a proof from our Mishnah to this principle. Amre, the Gemara says, Shani Atam, it's different over there. Kevan di'ika beta shechita, de mechalhal, medav daibe. Gemara says, no, since over there, the way it's positioned is that the neck of the animal is facing down, and therefore all the blood that's inside is going to just drip all the way down through the neck of the animal. Therefore you cannot bring a proof from that case of the Mishnah to the case of the Mulyata that we're trying to discuss. Now the Aharonim do ask a question that they don't even understand what the proof was from our Mishnah. Maybe our Mishnah was talking about where all the meat was salted already. Who told you that there was blood in the inside meat? Maybe the inside meat doesn't have blood bichlal. Maybe it was salted. So the Gemara, what was the, why do you assume that the inside meat had blood in it, and therefore you have to come on to a whole question? And they leave this in abeyance. The simple answer is, since the Mishnah really didn't discuss salting it, so you have to assume it's even the case where it wasn't salted. For that matter, some of the Mefashim point out, why did the Gemara have to bring a case where you have a meat within a meat? What about a piece of meat in itself, which means you have from the one side of the meat to the other side of the meat. And therefore, why don't you come along and say that the blood is going to go from the top of the meat and it's going to go into the bottom of the piece of meat. So you have to say, kibol o kach polto, even in one meat. You don't have to come out the case of two pieces. So they come along and say, no, in one piece of meat, everything happens simultaneously. All the blood that comes out in one shot. And therefore the rule would be that since it's busy spitting out, it's not going to swallow even its own blood. But when you have two different pieces of meat, it could happen at different times. Therefore, there's a concern that the blood might go in, and therefore the question is it going to come out? The Gemara answers yes. Gemara, oh, kach polto. By one piece of meat, it is obvious. Comes the Gemara and says, "Nema Messiah, let's bring a proof, maybe from over here. Haliv, when it comes to the heart of the animal, koro, it says you have to cut it open, umotzi et damo, because the blood of the heart rests in its cavity." It's not swallowed in the flesh of the blood. It's just sitting in the cavity of the heart itself. So it says you have to cut it open and drain it. Lo kira'o. Now if you didn't cut it open, kor'o le'ahar bishulo umutar. So then you would cut it open after the bishul. Now Rashi says at this point the word bishul we're understanding to mean roasting. Which means you roasted the heart. After you roast the heart, just cut it open. Whatever blood is left over, just pour it out. So the Gemara says, "My tama, how could this be legal? Lav bishum damnin and kibolo kach poto. Must be, you have to say, that any blood that went into the heart is going to come out. Therefore, you're not worried about that. You're only worried about the blood that remained. Therefore, just open it up after the roasting and spill it out. So you see the principle of kibolo kach poto. The Gemara says, no, shani lev deshiya. The heart is different because it is smooth, meaning the inside wall of the heart does not swallow anything. The texture of the flesh of the heart is shia, and therefore, even if you were to cook the heart with the blood in it, you would still be able to open it up after and spill it out, because no blood is going to penetrate the wall, the inside wall of the heart at all. And therefore, you have no proof to the principle of kibbol'o. The Gemara says, "We have a story of Ravin the elder. Tafle hahi bar guzla. He breaded with dough a certain bar guzla, a certain guzla is like a dove. Okay, which means he took dough and he like a kiddush. He covered it with the dough. So the Gemara says." So the Gemara says, "Hai bar guzla le Rav." He made it for Rav. The Amar le. So Rav told him, "I maale tafle." If the dough tastes good, if it's a good taste, havli, give me some of it. Ve'echol, I want to eat this breaded dove. So the Gemara's question, obviously, is how did he eat it? We're talking about where it was roasted. Now you have to assume that if it was roasted, that means the blood went from the bird. From the dove, and it had to drain itself out through the dough itself. So therefore, must be if he was willing to eat it, it's because of the principle of kibbol'o, kach polto, that whatever goes into the dough, came out of the dough. So the Gemara says, no, ha'hi bismida de mafrid. The Gemara says that this is talking about smida, which is fine flour, which is crumbly, which means it's porous. And therefore, it's very easy for the blood just to come out. It means you have no proof from this case to the case of the meat. The case of the meat that's inside, maybe you don't say kibbol'o kach poto, but the case of the breaded dove was talking about fine flour, and therefore the blood is able just to go right through it. The Gemara says, "Ve'harava." But we have a story of Rava. Ikla leberesh gilutai. He was by the house of the exilarch. Ve'taflu lebar avza. They took a goose, and they breaded it also with this dough. Amar, he said, "Ilo dehazite dezig." If I didn't see that it is that the gravy, right, was clear. Zig is clear. Kizuza hevra, like white glass, meaning like clear glass. Lo achle mine, I would not eat it. Which means when he looked at this breaded goose,
he made sure that the juice that was coming out of it was clear. Okay. And therefore the dough itself was not reddish at all. It was only had like a white color of gravy, we'll say. And he said, if I didn't see that the gravy coming out of this was anything but clear, I wouldn't eat it. So the Gemara says, "V'is al kadatach kemolo kach poto." But if you hold the principle of kemolo kach poto, that the blood that goes in comes out, may iriyak kizig. What did he care that it was clear? Afilu kilo zig nameh. Even if it was a little reddish, he shouldn't have been concerned, because obviously that reddish color is not blood. Sometimes the gravy is also reddish. If you held kibbol okach poto, what are you worrying about? All the blood that was in there went out. Just like it left the goose, it also went through the dough. Ah, you see some red? That red, this is just regular mohal, it's regular gravy. So why was the rabbi very careful that only because it was clear? So the Gemara says, "Hatam bechivrata desharid." The Gemara says that that's talking about special flour. That flour was white flour, which is very firm, meaning the blood will not go through that type of flour. Should we agreeing? And that type of flour, it doesn't go through. So unless he saw that the color of it was clearly white, he wouldn't have eaten it. Because if it was blood, that already, it's possible that if it was red, it's possible that indeed would be blood. So he's made sure to check it. So therefore, the Gemara now comes out with different laws regarding flour. And the Gemara says, "Velcheta dismida." When it comes to the smid flour, that's the fine flour, ben asmik, ben lo asmik sharia. Whether you see a reddish color on the flour, on the dough, or not, it's mutar. Why? Because you definitely say, since it's porous, whatever blood went out, went all the way out. That blood that you're going to see, or that red, I should say, that you see, is not going to be blood at all. Right? Rashi says, ve'odem ze vadai lo demu damu. That red that you see on the dough is not going to be considered blood. Now, that's by the smida. The hivarta, that's the other extreme. That's that thick, firm dough. Izig kezuza hivra, if it's clear, like clear glass, sharia, then it's mutar. Ilo asir. But if it has even a little reddish color to it, it's going to be asur, because you have to assume that that is blood. Dishar kemahim, other flours, meaning not the fine flour and not the firm, thick flour, any other flour, asmik, asud. If you see it very reddish, then already you have to assume it's blood and it's asud. Lo asmik shari. But if it's not reddish, meaning even if it's light red, it'd be permissible. Mm-hmm. Meaning when it says Nikabaravi lo asmik shari, it means if it's not totally red, even if it has a little pigmentation, it's mutar. Because you have to assume that what? The blood did go out. But if it's very red, you have to assume that it's blood. So that's somewhere in the middle. So you have extremes. You have smida, which is always mutar. You have the white flour, which is only mutar if it's clear. And then you have the other flour where it depends. If it's very reddish, then it's asur. And if it just has a little pigmentation, then already it's going to be permissible. Comes the Gemara and continues. Hai mulyata. Back to this stuffed meat. Incidentally, the word mulyata comes from the word maleh. Maleh means full. I mean, the stuffed meat, man de asar, the opinion that says it's asur, afilu puma le tata. Even if the mouth of the animal is facing down, where it has the ability to drain, still is going to be asur. Afilu puma le tahat. Right? That even if the mouth is facing down. Uman de share, and the one that says it's permissible, afilu puma li'ail. Even if its mouth is facing up, it doesn't matter, because we say kibolo kach polto, and therefore it's going to drain out from the inside to the outside into the fire. Vilcheta, what's the bottom line halakha? There's mulieta share afilu puma li'ail. It is permissible even if the face is facing up. Now the Gemara discusses three other types of meat. Umsa, which that she's learning over here, is meat. Okay, a piece of raw meat into which blood has oozed. Which means one of the veins opened up into this piece of meat, so there's definitely blood in there. Now that blood is asur. Normally the blood that's in a piece of meat is mutar, so long as it doesn't come out.
However, blood that oozes into a piece of meat from somewhere else is going to be forbidden. So therefore, you have to make sure to get this blood out somehow. For that matter, be'ayah is the testicles of the animal, which also have veins of blood that are going through it. U'mizrekeh. The mizrekeh would be the major arteries of the animal, specifically in the neck, where there's a lot of blood in these arteries. So the common denominator between all these things, it has blood in it that is isur. So what is it? What do you do? Peligi bara bahav ravina. We have a machloket between ravina and ravaha. Now the Gemara gives us a rule. Bechol haTorah kula. Throughout the whole Torah, Rav Acha lechumla. Rav Acha is always the mahmir, the stringent one. Veravina lekula. And Ravina is usually the lenient one. Ve'elcheta keRavina lekula. And usually we posek like Ravina to be lenient. Debar mehanetlat. Besides the following three cases, the Rav Acha lekula. In this case, Rav Acha is lenient. Ve'Ravina lechumra. And Ravina is mahmir. Ve'elcheta keRav Acha lekula. In this case, we'll take Rav Acha to be lenient. What are the three cases? Hai umsa. This case of umsa de asmik. We have the red meat that the blood is running through it, that's oozing through it. The only way to kosher this meat is chatche. First you have to cut it open in order to drain the blood. Ummalche. Then you salt it, like you put, you know, significant amount of salt, the normal way of salting a piece of meat to kosher it, to get the blood out. Afil kedera shari. Then it's permissible even to cook it. Which means the main reason why you salt meat is if you cook it. Because if you roast meat, you wouldn't have to salt it. Because when you roast meat, the fire just draws out the blood. There's actually a machlok between Rashi and Tosafot. Rashi says you have to salt it lightly, where Tosafot says, according to the halakha, you don't have to salt it at all. Just the minhag is to salt it lightly. But when you're cooking something, the problem is if you don't salt it, what's going to happen? It's sitting in a pot. So the blood's going to come out, and then it's going to go back in. Once the blood goes back in, that blood is forbidden. So therefore you have to salt it before cooking. Shafdeh b'shipuda. But if you're going to take this umsa with the blood, and you want to put it on a spit and roast it, shareh, it'll be permissible. Why? Medav da'iv. Because what's going to happen? It's going to draw out the blood. The blood is going to drip out. Which even if you didn't cut it open, you just took the umsa and you stuck it on the spit over the fire. So all the blood that's in there will get drawn out. Achte agumre, but placing it on coals, that's already a machloket. Peligi bara v'chav rabina. Had asar. One rabbi said asur v'had share. And one said permissible. Man de asar. The reason why one said it's asur, mitzmat samit. Because when you put it over the coals, what happens to the meat? It shrivels up. By shriveling up, the blood stays in. The blood does not come out. Uman de shari, even the one that says permissible, mish'av sha'iv. The coals and the heat of the coals actually draw the blood out. Vilcheta mish'av sha'iv. Now that guy is like the lenient opinion that what? If you even put these items on the coals itself, the blood will be drawn out and it's permissible. V'chein be'ayah, regarding the testicles of the animal. Hatchinu, if you cut them open and the blood is drained, umalchinu, then you salt them. Afid l'kedera sharen, it'll be permissible even to cook it because there's no blood. Talinu b'shipudat, if you hang it on a spit, sharyat, it's permissible. Why? Medav da'iv, because the blood is going to drip out by the fire. Achtinu agumre, but if you place it on coals, again we have the same machloket. Peligi be, Rav Acha v'Rabina had asar. Once it is forbidden, the had shadeh. Once it is permissible, man the asar. The one that said it's permissible, same logic. Mitzmat samit, they become shriveled and they become small, and therefore the blood stays inside. Uman the shadeh. The one that says it's permissible, mishav shaiv. The blood draws out from the fire. Okay, period. Vechen mizrekeh. And regarding these veins arteries of the animal that have blood in them, if you cut them open to drain the blood out, and then you salted them properly, even to cook them would be permissible, there's no more blood. If you hung it on a spit, and you face the neck down so the blood will drain out, why? Because the blood will drip and fall out. But if you place these arteries with the neck on the coals,
and the same machloket. Had asar v'had chare. Once it is forbidden, once it is permissible. Man, the asar, the permission that says it's forbidden, mitzvah tzavit. Because he holds again, the artery will shrivel up, and therefore the blood will be locked in. Uman de shari, the permission that says it's permissible, mishav shayim bilcheta, mishav shayim. Halakha says it will get drawn out. And now the Gemara continues. Hai umsa. This meat that has the blood that's oozing into it, that's meat that it's red from the blood, halye asir. So the Gemara now says it's halye is asir. What is halye? So that she gives two interpretations. Halye either means it's mu'al, which is its gravy. The gravy that comes out of it is going to be asur. Or he says halye is the vinegar. The custom was sometimes on umsa, after they would roast it, they would drop it in vinegar in order to make sure that any extra blood that's in it would come out. So there was a double process. So either the Gemara is talking about the mohal, the gravy of the umsa, or it's talking about the vinegar that the umsa was soaked in after it was roasted. In any event, the Gemara says, if the umsa was, if it's red, which means it had this blood in it, so the mohal is going to be asur. Why is the mohal going to be asur? So, okay, Rashi just brings the two interpretations. Right, the reason why it's going to be asur is because there is going to be some blood that is inside the mohal. Or there's going to be blood that's in the vinegar. Which means some traces of blood are going to come out. And therefore, the gravy is asur, as well as the vinegar itself. Either interpretation. Lo asmik halyeh, but if the gravy is clear, meaning you don't see any redness, or let's say you don't see any redness in the vinegar, shari, then it would be permissible. So again, obviously this opinion is following the opinion that we learned above, that's lenient. When you take the umsa, let's say you put it on the coals. So even when you put it on the coals, there was an opinion that said it's mutar because all the blood drains out. And therefore they're just telling you that if the gravy that comes out also is clear, you have no problem. Yeah. But if it's a little reddish, you have to assume that maybe there's still some blood left, and therefore it's going to be asur. Ravina Amar, now Ravina was the mahmir, right? Ravina said, afilu lo asmik nameh, even if it's not red, halye asir. The gravy or the vinegar, either opinion, is going to be asur. Why? It's impossible. You're not going to have traces of blood, which means he holds that you have to be mahmir. I mean, even if you put it on the coals over there, and even if it comes out, let's say clear, or you drop it in vinegar after it's clear, doesn't matter. There is going to be some traces of blood. Amar le mor bar amemor de Rav Asher. So mor, the son of amemor, told Rav Asher, Abba, meaning my father, amemor megama le gimure. He would swallow this gravy, which means so long as the gravy was clear, after they would roast the umsa, he would drink it, or he would drink the vinegar. The point is, he was lenient. He didn't hold like the Mahmid opinion of Ina. He held that you don't have to worry about traces of blood. Some say Rav Asher gufe megamah legimue. Some say Rav Asher himself would drink the mohal or the vinegar. Amar le mor bar amemor le Rav Asher. Mor bar amemor told Rav Asher, Abba, my father, hay hala, this vinegar, dehalit pechadazimna, that he used to soak meat in it once, to lo taneh halit pe, he would not use it again, which means the vinegar that he used to soak the roasted meat, in order to take out the extra blood, he would only use it once, he wouldn't recycle the vinegar. So the Gemara asks, why? Because it seems after you use it for one time already, its potency is used up. And therefore it's not going to be strong anymore. So the Gemara asks, Maishena mehala mitamha, why should the recycled vinegar be any different than weak vinegar? Dehaltinan be, which means weak vinegar that was never used, we use it to soak the meat in. So the Gemara is asking, why does second-hand vinegar not do the same job as first-hand weak vinegar that we always use? So the Gemara says, big difference. Hatam ite lekiyuha de pira be'ene, which means on the new vinegar,
the natural strength of the fruit is still present. However, unused vinegar, the strength of the fruit is not there. What does this mean? The fruit, obviously, we're talking about is the grape, because the vinegar comes from wine. And therefore, it seems that in vinegar, there's a certain strength or potency. Even on the weakest of vinegars, there's a certain element of the vinegar that's able to draw out the blood. So the Gemara says that on new vinegar, no matter how weak it is, it still has that element of the strength of the peri in it to draw out blood. But on used vinegar, that strength was used up. And therefore, if you use it a second time, it doesn't have that element anymore. Let's read the Taplashi. The kiyuah de pira, ta'am peri omedbo. Meaning the strength of the fruit or the flavor of the fruit is there. Shelo tzime menu klum. Because it never left. It was never used before. Even though itself it is weak in that vinegar, it's not the ability to pull out blood. Why? Because that power is still inside of it. Because when you use the vinegar the first time, the meat drew that out. Therefore, the second time, it is not as effective. Amen.